Avos Perk Aleph Mishnah Yerches 118, the last of the Perek, and here we have Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel Omer. Now, there is a discussion in the Mefarshim who this Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel is. Most learn that this is the grandson of the Shimon of the previous Perek. So this Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel was Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel, the son of Rabban Gamliel de Yavne. He was, you know, after the Chorban. And the previous Shimon, who was actually Rabban Shimon, Ben Gamliel also, was the last Nasi in the time prior to the Chorban Beis HaMikdash. There are, however, those who learn that this is the same Shimon as the previous Mishnah, and here he's called Rabban Shimon as opposed to the previous one, because there it was, like I said before, when he was younger, and now we're talking about him when he said this, when he was functioning as the Nasi. Whatever the case is, he says, Al Shlosha Devarim Ha'olam Omed, the world stands on three things, Al Hadin, on justice, v'al ha'emes, and on truth, v'al ha'shalom, and on peace. And in fact, I'm not in love with any of those translations, but that's what we have to work with for now. It's one of our translations. And then the Mishnah ends off by saying, shene'emar, as it says in a pasuk from Zechariah, emes u'mishpat shalom shiftu b'sha'reichem. Truth and mishpat, rule of law, justice, and shalom, peace, you should judge in your gates. Now, this last proof text is a little strange in as much as it's not clear how this proof text from Zechariah proves that the world stands on these three things. And in fact, there are many who take that out of the Gears altogether, that last proof text that it doesn't belong. At all events, first and foremost, we're confronted with a bit of a problem in as much as back in the second Mishnah of the Masechta, we had Shimon HaTzadik, who said the world stands on three things, Torah, Avodah, and Gilus Chasadim. And it would be very peculiar for Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel, whoever he is, he's certainly hundreds of years afterwards, for him to take issue and argue directly with Shimon HaTzadik, who was a member of the Anshei Knesset HaGadolah. It just seems highly unlikely. Now, therefore, there are those who say that the Girsa is not quite like that, and some have the Girsa over here, maybe you have in front of your own mission in front of you, that it's Al Shlosha Devarim Ha'olam Kayam, the world persists based on three things. This actually I mentioned back in the when I said that mission over there, there's a version of that mission which says, Al Shlosha Devarim Ha'olam Nivra, the world is created for three things. At all events, the Mefarshim understand that the difference between these three of Mishnah in front of us here and Mishnah Base previously was the three that Shimon HaTzadik are talking about are reasons for the world being created. And without them, the world sort of would have no purpose and kind of go back to toe and vo. Whereas here we're talking about the social world, the world of human beings, their interactions, and that depends, the stability of civilization, of society, depends on these three things. So it's just separate. Now, I should speak out that although we're making that differentiation, there is a Gemara which kind of connects these ideas and talks about how they are keeping the world going in the Briyas HaOlam sense. This is a Gemara in Shabbos, Daf Yud Amud Aleph, 10a. And it says, Rav Chista, Varaba, Rav Huna, Havu Yasvi, Bedine Kula Yoma. They were sitting judging all day. Vahava Kakalish Libayhu, and they got hungry because they hadn't eaten. Tanalahu, Rav Chia, Rav Medifti. So this Amora said in front of them, the Pasuk says, Viyamur Ha'am al Moshe min Habokar Vada Erev. The people stood before Moshe from morning till evening. That's the quote. So this Rav Chia, Rav Medifti says, V'chisal al da'atcha she'moshe yoshev v'dan kol yom kulo. You think that Moshe Rabbeinu sat and judged the people from morning to night every day? Torah so masay nasis. So what would he have time to communicate the Torah? Moshe Rabbeinu's primary role in Yisrael is to teach the Torah that he got on Har Sinai, so it makes no sense that all day long he's adjudicating legal cases. El lomer lecha, it's coming to teach you, kol dayan shadan din emes la'amito. Really, that's harkening largely to our Mishnah here. Any judge who judges din emes, who carries out justice emes, like in living in reality and truth, la'amito, to the nth degree. So if he judges properly, consistent with the Hashem's emes, the Torah, then afilu sha'achas, even if it's for 1 hour of the day, ma'ale alav akasov, in heaven it's like ascribed to him, as if ki ilu nasa shutaf l'kodesh baruch hu b'ma'ase bereishis, as if he's a partner with Hashem in ma'ase bereishis, in creating of the world. And then there's a proof text which connects these two things. K'siv hacha, Over here, in our context, it says V'yamar ha'am al Moshe min ha'boker v'ad ha'erev. The people stood before Moshe from morning to night. Uksiv hasam, and back in Maaseh Bereishis, in the creation of the world, it says V'yerev v'boker yom echad. Night and it was evening. It was morning. One day. Day one. One day. And so you see that there's a notion of judging the people is like creating the world, or it's as if you were the partner with Hashem and creating the world. So that Gemara here definitely conflates these two ideas, that a din that's done din emes lamito, if you're the purpose of justice and the judge ensuring, you know, nonviolent conflict resolution in the court system is to promote social harmony, shalom, and he's doing it with din emes lamito, it's justice, it's true. So he is like a partner in creation of the world. So that really does sort of tie the notion of the values of our Mishnah and Yudches back to the values that we ascribed back to Shimon HaTzadik, the meaning of creating the world. I have to add, this is what I'm saying now, you have to take with a big grain of salt, because this is without any basis. This is just Joel Padowitz's Chiddush here, which you can take or leave. I just should point out, because it's a curiosity to me, and I want to share with you, the Gemara immediately preceding that Gemara, which is sort of a bit of a non sequitur in the first place, in Shabbos Yud Amud Aleph, the immediately preceding Gemara says, Rav Amir Va'asi Havu Yasfi V'Garsi Beni Amude. The two great Amoraim, who are in Sanhedrin, are referred to as like the judges of Israel, and they lived in Tiberia, and it says they would sit and they would learn Beni Amude between the pillars of the Beis HaMikdash, presumably somewhere in the middle of the Beis HaMikdash, wherever the pillars were, maybe affording some privacy. V'chol shata v'shata, and every like hour on the hour, havuk tafchi a ibra dadasha, they would like knock on the bolt of the door, v'amri, and say, ika de isle dina leil v'lesi, if anyone has any din Torah they need to adjudicate, so let them come now. That's the whole Gemara. And it's a funny Gemara, like, what's the point of it? Of course, without a doubt, the Mefarshim have what to say about, you know, what's come to teach you. But I just want to suggest something which is a little creative, and it's cute, if nothing else, is that it's strange that they're in the middle of the room between the pillars, and they go to the door and bang on the bolt of the door, the ibra de dasha, the bolt on the dasha, like the door. In any case, I just want to suggest maybe that dasha, which is a funny word to itself, meaning like the door of the Beis HaMikdash where they went to, is osios, is the three letters din, shalom, and emes, dalet, shin, aleph, perhaps alluding to the fact that in their carrying out the learning of Torah and for the sake of being able to administer justice, they are there reminding themselves every hour on the hour, so to speak, what we're here to do and we're trying to do here is to uphold the world through din, shalom, and emes, and they're not losing sight of that. So it's a constant reminder, kind of like how you kiss the mezuzah and you walk in the room and so on, a constant reminder of what they're actually doing. Yeah, that's my cute idea, take it or leave it. In any case, back to our Mishnah. So our Mishnah that was focused on the prerequisites for a stable society, how society can continue on. Now, there's a lot to be said about this. If you're unfamiliar with, you know, you don't do much thinking about, you know, political theory. So I'm going to refer you to a great essay that the Rabbi Jonathan Sacks has. It is his introduction to Covenant and Conversation, to his book on Devarim, and he has a Hakdama there, and he explains this, discusses this at great length, and truly worth your while to read. In any case, the short of it is that the notion of society is people living together, trying to make something which is greater than the sum of the parts, meaning there's a reason why you don't live alone on a mountaintop. It's because you figure if you live as part of a community, you can achieve more than if you would be on your own. Now, the problem is that the central value of the individual is his autonomy, his freedom of choice. Your free agent and your free agency is what defines as a person, as a purpose of your existence, and you want to be able to, you naturally want to be you and do you, and that's defining what you are and what the purpose of your existence is, to make yourself who you're going to be. So the person wants to have autonomy. The problem is once you have a society of people working together, living together, operating together, so everyone is a free-willed being who has his independent will, and my will might kind of bump up against your will, and maybe what I want isn't consistent with what you want. So now we've got a potential problem of who gets to have his way. And in the, when you have a society of, you know, tens or hundreds or thousands of people, so then you have to figure out a way to coordinate everyone to coordinate their wills so that we can operate together in sort of a peaceable way, in a productive way, where indeed we can achieve this goal of having a society where the sum of the society is greater than each of its parts. It's worthwhile us coming together. So there are basically three ways you could organize a society to coordinate their competing wills. The first, essentially, is with positive incentive. So basically, everyone's told, listen, everyone acted of his own best interest, get as much as he can for himself, and Adam Smith's guiding hand, invisible hand, I should say, will ensure that everyone, that's the best case scenario. That's like a market economy, right? So a market economy is everyone acts for himself, and we say, listen, the ultimate value is freedom. Everyone should be able to act, do what he wants, and of course that comes at a bit at the expense of order, which is what we're trying to figure out here. When we're trying to figure out how to balance everyone's individual freedom, we want to have a society which is, we need it to be orderly. So when you're having a market economy, everyone does their thing. So then, of course, you have more freedom at the expense, potentially, of order or quality. But it's not bad. Okay? There's a second possibility, which is instead of giving sort of letting people decide what they're going to do based on positive incentive, instead you can essentially arrange it by force. You can tell them what to do. You can have like an authoritarian government. And there, essentially, we impose order on the people, which has its advantages. You have order now, but maybe at the expense of people's freedoms, right? The government's telling you what to do, which certainly, rubs. It has its advantages. You have an orderly society, maybe a safer society, a cleaner society, but people have to sacrifice more of their freedom. You could think of, China or something today. Now, there is a third possibility, and this is what Sachs suggests, is the Torah's vision, is to have a society which operates not because of selfish interest and not because they're being forced externally, but rather by mutual agreement, by mutual concern, mutual responsibility. So I agree to curtail some of my desires and will because I'm interested in you as well. I'm taking care of you as well. There's arvus, there's mutual responsibility, and this is the Torah's vision, what Rabbi Sachs refers to as covenantal society. The idea being that we have a covenant between us, and what ensures that I act in a way which is not totally inconsistent with your interests and vice versa. I take your interests to heart, I help support you, I help minimize conflict with you, and I take responsibility for you, is that we have entered into this bris, this covenant together. And the idea is that I'm committing to you. I'm committing to be responsible for you and look out for your best interest. No one's forced me to, and I understand that it might mean me foregoing some of my freedom in certain scenarios, but my attitude is my identity of self is bigger than just me. It's us. It's we. We're together. We're Knesset Yisrael. We're the Jewish people. We're our local kehillah, our community, and therefore my interests are more than just me. It's that our larger community should succeed, therefore I take responsibility for you as well. Now, those are three possibilities of how to organize society and balance freedom and order. If you look back in our Mishnah, you'll see these, however you organize your society, whether you're talking about a radical free market economy or a total authoritarian, society or this covenantal society, Din, Emes, and Shalom of our Mishnah are necessary prerequisites to underpin these things so they don't implode, they don't collapse. So let's talk about din first. So din, Lucy translated, I said, was justice. But din means like law and rule of law. It implies, enforcement of property rights, which is the kind of things that the Mephoshim is speaking out here. Din means that if I take something that belongs to you, you'll get it back. If I break your window, I'll be forced to repair it, to make, restitution. That's what din means. Now, if you're talking about a free market economy, okay, so obviously what makes the American stock market more appealing than the stock markets of, what goes on in Brazil and South Africa and Russia, is people believe there's a rule of law, that their property rights will be enforced, that it's predictable. If they put money in, they can get out when they want. They won't just, won't be corruption or unfair treatment of one company over another company and the like. So in a free market economy, you need to be assured, if you're taking a risk, then your property rights are protected, your personal rights are protected, that you're not going to be mistreated relative to somebody else. It's a rule of law, and the government hasn't got a disproportionate power over you, etc. Without that, you'll be afraid to extend yourself and expose yourself. You won't feel comfortable operating in that market economy because there's no rule of law. It's corrupt or unfair or unjust or unreliable or unpredictable. And the same really is true if it comes to an authoritarian government. So if you believe the government is like sort of acting in the interest of the people, which is what every like communist society is trying to convince the people that we're acting in your interest. So then, as long as, you know, rule of law is enforced and people are paid on time and people are protected if something bad happens to them, you'll have a very orderly society and also a stable society, okay? If people feel that there isn't a rule of law, that it's corrupt, that they, you know, that other people are taking advantage of or getting what they don't deserve, or that people can harm them with impunity or take the stuff without impunity, without having to be aware of the consequences, then you've now destabilized that authoritarian regime, and people will revolt. They won't trust the government to dictate their lives because they believe the government hasn't got their interests at heart. So you need to have din. And the same is true, of course, with this covenantal society, if you will. We're agreeing to cooperate out of a sense of mutual love and respect and concern. That's wonderful. But obviously, as soon as there's no rule of law and some people can get away with things and others, so then I have to watch my own back, I'll stop being interested in looking out for you and start looking out just for me. And the notion of, you know, this reciprocity, of covenantal reciprocity, obviously will implode. Why should I? How can I afford to look out for your interests as well when mine aren't protected? Then you have emes. So emes, again, translated loosely as truth. I actually like it more translated as reality in the context of Hashem's reality, which is truth. But the idea is the same here, that if you want to have a stable society, whatever kind of society, it needs to be based, the assumptions, the operations, the policies, have to be based on what's true and what's real. And if not, then it all implodes. So obviously, in a free market economy, as you're witnessing right now in many countries in the Western world, once you stop trusting the government, you stop trusting the media, you stop trusting, you know, big pharma, and you think they're out to lie to you and mislead you, and you know the truth, but they don't. So obviously that totally destabilizes society, and people become rebellious and distrusting. And you can't organize society because the larger institutions which are there to organize the society, like the government, are no longer deemed reliable. They're living a lie. And therefore, once you sort of lack the notion of what's real, so then, and that you're being trying to be misled, the wool's being pulled over your eyes, so then you kick back. That's also why in these like sort of dystopian, you know, literary dystopias, we have this authoritarian regimes like a 1984 type place. So it's all about lying to the people, controlling them through lies. And that may be true in the real world. Look at North Korea today. That's what's happening, right? So they dare not let the truth out. If the North Korean people would have access to open internet and see how the rest of the world lives, they obviously would, the country would topple. It would be destabilized. So they need to, you know, essentially, people who are aware of living not in truth will absolutely not permit themselves, you know, if they're being lied to being governed by an outside source. Ayn Rand has a great line my Rebbe used to quote often. She said, You can ignore reality, but you can't ignore the consequences of ignoring reality. So you can pretend everything's A-okay and that nothing's going to happen to you if you eat this way and you behave this way and your court systems, you know, are this way. But if they're all rotten and corrupt and inconsistent with how things are really there, there will be consequences. And that will be destabilizing society. And therefore, you know, it all implodes. And perhaps that's why, you know, when Chazal talk about how Hashem's seal is emes. Hashem's signature is emes. So the idea is emes is the beginning, middle, and end. It's like these like three pillars, kind of the same way the Chazal imagined like the three pillars on which the world is standing, and where society is standing. They have in mind this picture of like, you know, like a bar stool, a three-legged stool that's stable, that stands on three legs. Emes, same idea, that it's like the beginning, middle, and end of the alphabet, those letters, and the idea is that it ensures stability. And each of those letters, Aleph has like kind of like two legs, like it's a flat base, and the Mem has like a flat base, and the Tav has like a flat base, the letter, the shape of the letter itself. I think these are, so to speak, stable letters, if you can, you know, if you will. In contrast, the Gemara says that is Sheker, the antonym of Emes, of Sheker is like falsehood, lie. So there, Sheker inherently lacks stability. as Chazal point out, it's like all shoved to the end of the alphabet. Those like the penultimate letters of the alphabet. You know, Shin, Shin is the second to last, and Resh is the third to last, and Kuf is the fourth to last letter. They're bunched together, and also the shape of those letters, like as you write them in the Sefer Torah, the Shin like rests on a little point, and the Kuf Resh balances like a little leg, and the Resh balances like on one little leg also. And those are all sort of like unstable letters. The point is that Sheker lacks stability and will ultimately crumble. Okay, and so that's true in the covenantal society. If you're committing to your fellow Jew, let's say, so it's based on the assumption that he has integrity, that what he promises he will uphold. If you find out that your covenantal partner is lying, the whole covenant is based on the fact that I'm morally committed to you. I'll come to your aid when it needs to happen. If that's a lie, so then the covenant breaks. Okay, so obviously you can't have a covenantal society without emes. And finally, you have shalom. So shalom, this is almost like tautological. Shalom means peace, but in my like expanded definition of what I think shalom really means, it's like from lashon of shlemut, of completion, but it's that sense of all the parts are working together. It's shalem, it's whole. All the parts are working in harmony. So my translation of shalom really is harmony. And obviously, ipso facto, by definition, if your society lacks shalom, then it obviously is unstable, right? It's not going to stand because people are fighting, infighting. I want to suggest there's a Mishnah in Uktzin, I think everyone knows, well known, that says, Lo matza kodesh baruch hu kli machzik bracha li Yisrael ele shalom. Hashem never found a utensil that could hold the blessings that he wants to bless the Jewish people with better than peace. I think I may have mentioned that earlier on in the Masechta. My understanding of this, like the depth of this, is that the notion of harmony, of peace, is that you're working, you're coordinating your efforts, and you become greater than the sum of your individual parts. If that's the case, so you become like, as an individual, you're a small kli, a small receptacle for Shem's bracha. But if, as a society, you work in unison, you create something much bigger than yourself, so you become a much bigger kli to receive a much bigger bracha from Hashem. Therefore, obviously, there's no way there could be something which is a greater receptacle, a greater vessel to receive God's blessing than a society which makes itself, bigger than some of its parts, which means they're working in harmony, which is the definition of shalom. And similarly, without shalom, it all collapsed. That's why, Chazal say that the Beis HaMikdash is only destroyed b'pnei sinas chinam. Once you have a lack of trust, a lack of fraternity, lack of people working together and sort of turning on each other, so then necessarily the world collapses and implodes. And therefore, says the Mishnah, you need these three things: din, emes, and shalom. These are three prerequisites for a stable society, which we're trying to build for ourselves. You have to make sure you're a paragon of din, of justice, fairness, of emes, of truth, living reality, and being true to your word, having integrity, and shalom, learning to get along and work together with other people to bring out the best in your fellow. And if everyone does that, obviously, then you have a society which is robust and will be the kli that's machzik, the bracha that Hashem wants to give Yisrael.